Mr. Herman.
Poop again! Party on, dude!
10, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Extreme close up!
Welcome back into the Radcast, everybody. I'm Steven.
I'm Matt.
And we're here. It's the final episode, final week of Martial Arts Month.
Yes, what has been a very successful month.
Yes, exactly. And we have definitely saved the last for last for this episode. It's not indicative of our guest. We're very excited to have him back with here in just a second. If you've been with us this whole week, you've heard us talk about surf ninjas with our mom, our sister, and our nephew. You heard us talk about sidekicks.
Just the two of us.
Last week we talked about Double Dragon with Derek Gove.
That was fun.
We were happy to have him on. It was a great episode. This week we were talking Karate Kid Part 3 with Mr. Dave Little himself. Yes. We'll get to hear him here in just a second. Sounded like he was taking in a breath, getting ready to talk.
It seems...
Don't speak yet.
Of all the Karate Kid movies, this one seems like a random pick.
Yeah.
Why would you say we picked Karate Kid Part 3?
I mean, it was a movie that, and we can, maybe we'll just talk about our history a little bit here, and then we'll get Dave. But before we get to social medias and everything.
Of course.
It was a movie that we rented quite a bit growing up. The first one, after our mom got it on DVD, we watched it a bit, quite a bit. Next Karate Kid, we got it as a birthday present.
Yeah.
Watched that quite a bit.
For the lulls.
For the lulls, but you know, it's whatever. I liked it okay.
It was all right.
Karate Kid Part 3 was one that we rented a lot from the video store because I was like, I vaguely remember this when I was a kid, but we always skipped 2.
Yeah, I think it's just because the stakes were way higher in the second one, which is kind of what you want from a sequel.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking a fight to the death in the second one, not just some local karate tournament. And so that the idea of that in any movie on the main character kind of was put me a little on edge.
And this one just seemed like an easy watch.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it since we were kids, and this is coming off the heels of me watching the first two.
Mm-hmm.
And within the context of that and not just watching it by itself, very disappointed.
Extremely disappointed.
Yes. We'll talk about our disappointment and some of our views on it. And, of course, we'll formally get to our guests. But
there are decent things about
it. There are decent things. Definitely a decent character. Things that make us... I would say I still like it. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's a nice... If you want to watch all three of them, the next... If you want to watch all of them, they're fine watches.
You put it on in the background.
The first two excellent films. This one is fine.
Yeah.
The next Karate Kid's fine.
Yeah.
But we'll get more on our thoughts here in just a second. But before all that, why don't you let everyone know where they can always find
us? You can always find us for social media on Instagram. We're at The Radcast. Cast is spelled with a K. The Radcast is all one word.
Mm-hmm.
And then on any and all podcast apps, you can find our show, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. You can find us everywhere and then wherever... it is applicable, rate and review.
Mm-hmm.
Give us those 5-star ratings. Give us a little review. Mm-hmm. Really help us out.
Yes, exactly. Let's just get into the movie here, but not before we get into our guest. You saw it on the title. You've heard us tease it the last few weeks.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, making his return. His last time he was on here was in October, and he's back here now.
Appearance number 4.
And he's on the cusp of becoming a 5-timer. You'll get there soon, my friend. Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Little is back.
Hello, Dave. Thanks for letting me on.
Of course.
No problem.
Fourth time on the Radcast.
Yes, fourth time on the Radcast.
Two times on Sooktastic. Yep. Sixth appearance.
Six appearances.
Pretty cool.
Cool. Those of you who are just joining us, Dave, this is his fourth appearance, but ever since we started podcasting, Dave has been one of our biggest supporters.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Definitely someone who still listens to every episode.
Yep.
And Dave, we always give shout-outs. But he's always someone that we always want to make sure that we're letting him know that we appreciate his support.
If you've been listening for a while, sometimes we pepper in Dave impressions into episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't really bring you up without doing an impression.
Yeah.
It's all in love. It's never ridicule.
Yeah.
I hope it comes off that way.
Yeah, it does.
Okay, very good. There's also another reason Dave's on here, and I wasn't just joking when I said this. There's a character in this movie by the name of Terry Silver.
Yes.
And ever since
one of the best parts of the movie.
I think I said since I was a kid, I think the last time I watched this was, it was probably a few years ago.
I was going to say, it was probably at least 10 years ago.
It was close enough time to when we met Dave and started hanging out with Dave to where I could make this, recognize this. Dave looks like Terry Silver in this movie.
He has a slight resemblance to the main villain in this
movie. And then in some parts of the movie, a very strong resemblance to Terry Silver. That's why I say, Dave, quit looking at me, Terry Silver looking ass.
Terry Silver looking ass, yeah.
But Dave is here to talk about, I almost said the next Karate Kid. Karate Kid Part 3, thank you for joining us, Dave. We'll get into, when was the first time you ever watched Karate Kid Part 3?
2011.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Because you grew up with the Karate Kid movies, right?
No.
You didn't?
No, I did not.
Interesting.
I did not start watching them until 2006, I think.
Okay, well, that's still almost 20 years.
I knew what they were.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Even if you didn't, you were a teenager, so that's still fine.
I saw the next Karate Kid before I saw all of them. Okay, gotcha. You know, I had the Disney Channel.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was going to say, a lot of those, like, especially that one, they play, like, on TV, like, as a Sunday afternoon movie, or, like you said, the Disney Channel. So it'd be easy to watch any kind of movie series. It'd be easy to watch the sequels on TV before you even watch the original.
Yeah.
But with you not watching them until you're a teenager, you obviously don't have the kind of what can be the death knell for some things to some people, and that's like the rose-colored glasses.
Yeah.
You came to them at a more mature age, I would say. But what were your thoughts on just the series as a whole, not just this movie, but coming to them a little later than maybe some people might have?
I didn't really, like, I watched it, but didn't really think much of it. Mm-hmm. I think they all had that typical 80s feel, like, your villain kind of just, like, it.
Yeah.
Like, Terry Silver and Chosen in the second one are both characters where, like, you're like, oh, okay, like, maybe
psychopath.
I like them, and they're both psychopaths, and then Terry Silver, but like, kind of betraying, it's like, I don't know
that, '80s movies had a very specific format, especially like these underdog kind of movies, which, like, Rocky kind of set into motion, and then you get the, even with the original Karate Kid, it's very kind of over the top.
Oh yeah,
especially the villains.
These characters are lunatics.
Yeah, the oh yeah. By today, they're, you watch them in a movie and you're like, dang, they're kind of mean. But you step back and as you grow up, you're like, these guys should be in jail.
Especially with, like, the abusing students.
Yeah.
You know, causing students to, like, teaching them methods of martial arts that could kill people.
The bad guys are really bad, and the good guys are real, like, virtuous, and like, they're underdogs.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to root for them. So you want to make them really good, and you want to make the bad guys really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'd say, at least from talking with you in the last few years, I think you've gained
over the
more
over the, oh yeah, yeah. That's oh, where yeah. I was going. I was oh, yeah. Over the years I've become more and more of a fan. And obviously after the first season of Cobra Kai, I got into it even more. Sure. You know?
And that's it. That's
and
a
I
little,
mean the
yeah.
only the only the first season of Cobra Kai. I still watch the show, but I don't enjoy it nearly as much as the first season.
I watch it, but I hate it. That's fair.
Yeah, you're right.
I will say to you listeners out there, we're not going to be talking a lot about. We're really not going to be talking anything about Cobra Kai because Matt and I have never seen Cobra Kai.
Nope.
Yeah.
So
we do know it brings back a lot.
Oh
of
yeah, of course. Which I applaud, and that's fine. But Karate Kid Part 3. Some information about it: released June 30th, 1989. Directed by John Avildsen. So I mean, bravo to him for directing all three movies.
That is the thing that you don't get a whole lot with series. At least in these first three movies, it's the same actors coming back to play the main characters. Mm-hmm. It's the same director, same composers.
Mm-hmm.
You've got different writers in there.
Yeah.
But, like, you get a lot of the same core.
Yeah.
You don't get that too often with movie series.
Yeah, which is why it's curious as to why this one fell off, because you have the same core, same director, same writer. Bill Conti's back to do the score. We'll talk more about that here. Starring, and then also two of the key players, Ralph Macchio and Pat Morita. Ralph Macchio as Daniel LaRusso, Pat Morita as Mr. Miyagi, Robin Lively as Jessica Andrews, Thomas Ian Griffith as Terry Silver, Sean Kanan as Mike Barnes, and Martin Cove is back as Jonathan Kreese, mm-hmm. with a quick appearance by Randy Heller as Lucille LaRusso.
Oh, yeah.
She had, of course, played a much bigger role in the first movie.
John Alvinson's son.
John Alvinson's son, yeah. He tried out for Mike Barnes. Yeah. He wasn't what they were looking for, but they liked his tryout so much they created the character of Snake for him.
Yep.
And box office of $38.9 million on a $12.5 million budget. So... made some money.
It did. Yeah. Just probably off the strength of its name.
Yeah. And then also, and this by no means, I'm not telling you to turn this off. If you hear a
watch this, it's soundproof.
Oh, there you go.
I'm so sorry. I forgot.
No. There was a fan going to the background, so there's nothing wrong with any of your music players.
I would like to point out too, Dave, every time we record with Dave, it was either, there was a couple times we were at like our apartment, the last few times we were at his apartment. Since the last time we had Dave on, he and his wife Stephanie bought a house.
Yes.
And it's a very nice house.
It's a very nice house. The table we're sitting at looks like a giant guitar pick.
Yes, it does. So right now we're sitting in the kitchen of his beautiful home.
Mm-hmm.
He closed the door to his beautiful sunroom.
Yep.
That's where the fan was. And it's a very, so we, again, thank you for letting us use your space.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I'm so glad that we were able to record here. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Now, what was on the VHS, all of you out there may ask? just one thing, not as, I also would like to say, the first time Dave and his wife were ever on Sucktastic, we did Suburban Commando. The VHS opening portion was rockets.
Most hilarious part of the whole episode.
Yeah, it was a good episode.
Oh,
but
yeah,
the most hilarious part was what was on the VHS segment.
I got to capture that audio for the Instagram because now that I had the ability to do that, I didn't even think about that until you just said.
I have something, but I think I recorded it on my phone. I'll just send it to you.
Because
that was probably my favorite Sucktastic Cinema moment. So.
Yeah, I think I would agree. It's at least, I mean, aside from maybe a couple of other things that maybe at the top,
that's easily
the funniest moment in Sucktastic Cinema history.
Unfortunately, all that build up just to let you all down that this is a severely underwhelming VHS open compared to that.
That's all right.
It's just one thing. Coming to a theater near you, Gene Hackman plays a grizzled cop who's saddled with a new partner with multiple personality disorder, played by Dan Aykroyd, a comedy called Loose Cannons, and it looks shitty.
Well, of course.
And that was it. Sorry.
No, it's boring.
Exactly. Let's hope this episode isn't boring.
I really got nothing
so
to say.
So this movie did go to the movie theater, though.
Yeah, it was in the theaters. Because you asked that. You make a good point, because this very much feels like a straight-to-video.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, I was I mean,
like a Three Ninjas kickback. That was in theaters, but it's the same, like... It just doesn't feel the same.
Yeah. I was hoping you would have said Gene Hackman and an orangutan with multiple personality disorder.
Yes. That would have been great. And the sequel was Dunstan checks in.
Yes.
it's just a bunch of orangutans taking on different jobs.
Yes. And no one draws attention to it.
Yes. Now, I admit... Yes. I had mentioned earlier that the third movie... Third Karate Kid, I liked by itself, just watching it by itself as a kid, as a teenager, renting it, however we watched it. But within the context of the first two movies, it was really disappointing.
Yeah, the character of Daniel took like five steps back in terms of character progression that was actually established in the second movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. In the second movie does... So the first movie, of course, it's... We don't have to explain it to all of you. If you've watched this movie, you've more than likely watched the first and second, or first or second.
Yeah.
But essentially, it's Daniel LaRusso is a rough around the edges kid from the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Comes to California. He doesn't want to be there. Wrong place, wrong time. He's caught the ire of the karate gang.
Yeah.
And he essentially, he's being bullied until, you know, this old maintenance worker who he... becomes best friends with, who teaches him what real karate is. And
through unconventional
means. And entering the tournament was a necessary thing.
That was the end goal. He needed to do it. That was his big way of sticking up for himself, or else they would have tormented him.
Yeah.
At least for the rest of his high school experience.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a means to an end. Second movie, character progression. They go to Okinawa this time, where Mr. Miyagi's from. You see more of a development in the relationship between Miyagi and Daniel.
Yeah.
Mr. Miyagi, you see, becomes more of a father figure, but it also shows them being each other's support systems. Because Mr. Miyagi is now saddled with someone who wants to not just beat him, but to kill him.
Yeah.
Because all of the stakes in Okinawa are fight to the death.
Did you say Mr. Miyagi saddled with it or Daniel?
Mr. Miyagi.
Because they're
there because Mr. Miyagi's father is dying.
Right.
And he tells Daniel of someone who used to be Miyagi's best friend and also was taught by Miyagi's father, Sato.
Yeah.
And Sato, he ran from a fight with Sato. It was a fight to the death because Miyagi married a woman that, or was in love with a woman that Sato was supposed to marry.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes back, and the whole time Sato is poking at him and prodding at him. He's like, fight me to the death. You know, I'll give you time to mourn, blah, 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 and all these things. And there's a change. And this whole time, Sato's nephew, Chosen, starts picking at Daniel. And Daniel, the whole time, Daniel has the character development of he's more mature. And there's another thing that I'll have to mention. But you can tell between movies one and two that he's become more mature.
Yeah.
He's become more capable, more confident. And there's these different karate lessons he's being taught along with, you know, mixed in with the
building
life lessons.
Building upon his previous teachings.
And the stakes in that were a fight to the death near the end.
It's this great movie, sequel.
Yeah, exact. Phenomenal sequel.
Why did he go with him?
Daniel's mother. I have had the benefit of watching these.
Yes,
I watched it yesterday, the time we're recording it. Daniel's mother, got a position in Fresno that she was going to go to. The events of the second movie take place 6 months after the events of the first movie, and Daniel doesn't want to go to Fresno, and Mr. Miyagi surprises him and tells him, "I've worked out with your mom. I'm building a guest house, so you're going to stay with me for the summer." And it ends up Mr. Miyagi gets the news about his father, and then Daniel's like, "Well, I'll go with you. Like, Mr. Miyagi, come on. Like, you supported me this whole time. I want to be there for you." And he finally says, "Okay, you can come with me, Daniel-san." And then they're in Okinawa, and it shows Daniel's putting effort into becoming a better person with Mr. Miyagi by learning about Okinawan culture, learning about Okinawa. He meets his love interest for the movie, and he's asking her questions. Daniel is a much more
well-rounded
person, much more tolerable. He had his moments in the first movie where he was obnoxious, but he's a much more well-rounded person, much more heroic, much more depth to the character, and definitely not trying to jump the gun on things, wanting to follow the lead of Mr. Miyagi.
Tempered and measured.
Yeah. Less frustrated.
Yeah, exactly. Not whiny
snot-nosed kid.
Yeah. He's, you know, and he had his moments in the first movie.
Yeah.
But you could see the growth from the first to second movie because Daniel, he was a more capable character.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Like Matt said, they took way too many steps back in this movie.
They basically are redoing the first one with this movie. Like they tweak it a little bit here and there, but there's just, it's so weird to go from mature character who just saved his fought to the death kind of thing, spared the life of Chosen.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes back and now he's back to, granted, it took a while to get to this point because he's still sort of quote unquote mature at the, you know, towards the beginning of the movie. But eventually it just comes back around to something just comparatively so petty and shallow of defending your title in this local karate tournament. Yeah. Like it just, in the second one, it felt bigger and it felt more important.
You up the ante inside the sequel.
Yeah. And even when you explore the villains in this movie, they're kind of petty and just petty and pathetic bullies.
Yeah.
So when you get, it's just, that's what I mean. And then him as a character, he almost loses that growth and he's back to being just kind of a whiny kid, which also in the first one, isn't he like 15? And then now he's 18. That's so, the thing. I have a
how
huge
long was he in Okinawa?
Yeah,
that's
what I said at the
trip.
Beginning of the movie. Well, I was like, how long is he in Okinawa?
The thing is, the timeline is so skewed.
I can't stand
and kind
that.
Of the perception, the third one, it's just the third one feels like it doesn't have to earn anything. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't have to contribute. Well, we made two successful movies here.
Like, it knows it's a Karate Kid movie and people will see it and just be on board with it.
But it feels like it doesn't have to contribute to any sort of character growth.
Yeah. It's like whoever wrote, it's like you said earlier, it's got the core elements, as in the people who worked on the first two are there. It's almost like the whoever's writing it, it's this weird feeling of whoever wrote it had like the final say on everything, which is just with the story. It's like, how can you write a story this bad and everyone who was involved with the first two is just going along with it? Kind of thing.
Yeah, a lot of people were unhappy. Dave, there was an idea for what the third one could have been.
I don't know about it. I was listening to a podcast and I heard something that brought it up to you about them going back in time or something.
Yeah,
and
it was supposed to be like a prequel to follow the Miyagi family.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. I think I would have preferred that. I think that's a safe bet. You've already established these characters. I feel like Daniel LaRusso's arc is finished.
Yeah.
In the second one, like, okay, he's grown into a man, kind of thing, and he's like a young version of Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah.
So rather than trying to build on a story that is already seemingly over, let's just tell the story of Mr. Miyagi. Let's do that prequel if you have to do a movie in this series.
I heard that Pat Morita was going to play his grandpa, and then John Kreese's character was going to play a pirate.
What?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
In this Miyagi movie?
Yeah, and that where they go back in time.
So we're not talking a prequel. We're talking like a straight up.
They're
like
literally going in a time machine.
Yeah, like.
Okay, never mind.
I heard.
I would have preferred a. I would have preferred this movie
not
getting
a prequel.
Made.
They go back in time.
Okay, never mind. That's terrible.
And then like, I also read some or heard that they were gonna teach him how to fly and stuff.
What the hell is
this? I'm not kidding.
Maybe they went the better direction with this one.
Yeah, actually, when you put it in that context.
I don't want to bring up the show again, but...
No, please.
Without Karate Kid 3, there wouldn't be a Cobra Kai. I just don't think there would be.
And I would agree with that assessment, because the creator of Cobra Kai... Now, granted, this isn't the sole reason he created this show, but he said... He has said in like interviews that Terry Silver is his favorite character in Karate Kid. Man, that sounds awful. Like, what is like? So it's a magical fence, and he has to like paint the fence to go back in time.
I don't know.
How do they explain?
I didn't listen
to the
whole podcast.
Just do spin kicks to go back in time.
What would have been better is if they like kind of like an insert movie.
Yeah.
You know, they have four movies planned. The first two are the Daniel story, and then we can maybe catch back up like later. Maybe if they did continue Cobra Kai, that catches up with the Daniel story after the first two movies. But then you have Miyagi, and it's following the family or a young Mr. Miyagi, and then you can lead into the events of the fourth movie, which like Mr. Miyagi is, which involves these monks, and like at the beginning, Mr. Miyagi is going to this Veterans Day thing, and then you can kind of play into that a little more.
Yeah. Or if you do this movie, like let's jump ahead a few years. Daniel is like about to graduate college, and his plan after college is to open his own dojo, and he can call it the Miyagi Dojo.
Yeah,
and like because Ralph Macchio is just eternally youthful looking. Mm-hmm. He's 27 in
sure,
this
yeah.
movie,
yeah,
so and he's still playing an 18-year-old, which really throws you off. Fighting in this like, it's just again back to it feeling shallow and stupid that this kid is defending his title when really he should be, he's entering college, so he shouldn't even be competing in this tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And like Ralph, it would have played better in a Ralph Macchio actually being older in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Like he already looks young, so make him like 21, 22, mm-hmm. and then you can still have a conflict of Terry Silver starting the dojo back up.
That was his big evil plan.
Yeah.
Starting up dojos.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so we can have an adult conflict.
In a competing dojo.
Yeah, and we can still have a fight at the end. It just doesn't have to be at this stupid high school tournament.
It's just ridiculous. Like, yeah. They can't... you want to start a bunch of dojos, go right ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, it's mm-hmm. better than dumping nuclear waste anyway. Yeah. So.
And then
yeah, that's the thing.
If we do that, we don't even need Mike Barnes. Terry Silver can be the main villain, mm-hmm. and we get a fight between Danny... or Daniel and Terry Silver at the end.
Much like Joe Piscopo and Chuck Norris.
Exactly.
I think it would have been awesome if they just didn't have that stupid local tournament and they would have just had a fight like Rocky V,
like you said.
Or something. It would be so cool.
Yeah.
And then they can actually make an event out of it or something, and then they just show them training.
Yeah, because the techniques that... and. I don't want to dive too much into the progression of the movie, but the techniques that are introduced by Terry Silver in this emphasize, like, just going for the throat, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, take the aggressive techniques of Kreese in the first mm-hmm. one, and you amplify it.
Here's a pitch for a sequel. So let's say a sequel takes place the same year Next Karate Kid came out. Keep Hilary Swank. I like your idea of
Daniel
coming. So... 1 and 2 are the movies. 3 doesn't happen. 4, so 2 happened in 1986.
Yeah.
So let's say 2 happens after the events of 1. So Daniel's 18, 6 months after.
Yeah.
So Daniel's 18. He's going to be going into college.
Yeah.
Let's say 1994, that's 8 years later, 26 years old.
Yeah.
We could even make him 30.
Yeah.
You know, Mr. Miyagi passes away.
Yeah.
And what he did is he left his inheritance to Daniel.
Yeah.
So Daniel opens a Capini dojo. We run into Terry Silver. Terry Silver, like, you can even have John Kreese show back up. I don't know. He could be in a hospital.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just throw a hospital in there.
Yeah.
Terry Silver comes back.
I wish I was dead.
Yeah, exactly. And Daniel's teaching the virtues of Miyagi.
To Hilary Swank.
And also Terry Silver's trying to sway her over.
Yeah.
Or he's chastising her because she's a girl and blah blah blah, and then she goes in, wins the tournament, but the final fight is a street fight between Ralph Macchio in the parking lot between Terry Silver and Ralph Macchio. Yeah.
The student becomes the teacher, and she reminds him of everything.
She brings him back.
Yeah, that's a. I mean, again, it's not going to win any awards,
but at least
that makes sense within the story.
Yeah, exactly.
And you don't sacrifice the character development that Daniel had mm-hmm. in the second one that we lose in this one. But what movie did we get instead?
We got Daniel, who 28-year-old Ralph Macchio is playing an 18, 19-year-old because this is supposed to take place right after they get back from Okinawa, but it takes place 3 years after the movie, after the second one, 5 years after the first.
He's supposed to go to college, but he uses the college money to help Mr. Miyagi open a bonsai store. Mm-hmm. Factory.
Yeah.
It says in the, I'm reading Looper right now. I'm not saying this is factual, but despite the 16th, there's a 16th century China is where he meets his ancestors.
It's where they were going to go back in time.
And it indeed,
in the proposed third one.
And it indeed says that they were going to show them training him how to fly and use powers and magic and stuff.
You're serious. I was just joking.
No. And, John Kreese's actor was going to play his ancestor who was a pirate. That's just ridiculous. When your ancestors just meet, I don't know. But they didn't have the budget for it, apparently.
It was just the budget.
The budget is the reason why this movie didn't happen.
So not common sense.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm sure because some common sense worked its way in there.
Yeah, but
instead we get Daniel, who, again, is mature. He doesn't want to fight in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
But he's brought to a breaking point by a mixture of, or just by Mike Barnes. Essentially, and Mike Barnes, who's a new bad kid. It's just, this screams to me that person at your job who thinks they are owed something because of tenure. Yeah. Terry Silver, and it opens with Kreese, who's down on his luck because Daniel and Mr. Miyagi essentially spelled the end of the Cobra Kai dojo. Mm-hmm.
After a four-minute recap of both.
Yeah, exactly. And like, he's down on his luck, and his Vietnam buddy, Terry Silver, who... Thomas Ian Griffith
was only—he's 4 months younger than Ralph Macchio.
Yeah, who is in his early, who wouldn't have even fought in Vietnam. Yeah. But they were Vietnam buddies, and he funded the Cobra Kai dojo, which we're all finding out now. And basically, he's like, "I'm going to send you to—I want to help you out." You know, those two spelled the end of the Cobra Kai, and we're going to get revenge on them. Which, as the movie goes on, you're like, "Wait a second. These two grown men are focusing all their energy on getting revenge on a child."
Which I get it. He saved his life. I think it's pretty funny how it says, "How many times did you save my ass?" And the bullet points I got.
Yeah.
And I literally answered, "Just once."
Yeah, he literally saved him once.
Yeah. But it just shows how petty and insecure these men are. It's like, they embarrassed you, so we're going
to
kill them.
Yeah, their goal is to basically get this karate hotshot and have him... not just defeat Daniel and take his title, but really just destroy him and humiliate him.
In the second movie, humiliation is seen as like, it's done within the context of you stepped over my honor. Yeah. You dishonored me.
Death before dishonor.
Mr. Miyagi has the line, just paraphrasing, you know, he tells Daniel, you know, honor means more than you think it does here. And that's what Sato keeps saying. The chosen targets Daniel because Daniel keeps like disrespecting him and keeps, you know, he's dishonoring him. Yeah. Like he's ruining his honor.
Yeah.
So honor is a much bigger thing, and there's weight put on that.
Yeah.
And this, it's just two grown men. One of them, down on his luck, just was embarrassed that he got beat up by a little old Chinese or a little old Okinawan Japanese, man, a little Asian man.
He lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he also like, they show like what a few months later, or 4 years later, he ran his business to the ground, losing all his members.
Yeah.
He probably wanted revenge that way.
No, here's the thing. This is where it becomes confusing as to...
This all is in a matter of a year.
It's ambiguous.
As far as like the timeline of the movie and the movie's releases to when the audience would see them and the story.
Yes.
So
I hate when movies do this.
So the thing is... And it throws, there's 1984 was the first one, 86 was the second one, this is 1989.
Yeah.
So obviously it's 5 years. There's obviously 5 years of growth for the actors.
There's no way you can suspend your disbelief enough to prove that a year has passed.
And then
that's
there's
it.
five years of familiarity with the audience.
Yeah.
However, inside of the movie, it's just 1 year. It's just been a year since this happened to Kreese. 9 months to a year that it happened to Kreese. So you can't even like use, you know, the, you know, you ruined me 4 years ago. I've had to do this and that. Yeah. And then there's also on the other side, the development of the relationship between Daniel and Miyagi as the father son, you know, dynamic. It's much more believable if you use it as 5 years between, you know, as far as 5 years in the franchise and 5 years inside the story.
Yeah, because Dave, you're right. At one point, I think he does say like 4 years. So that's where you get, that's where Dave was getting that from.
But then they keep saying, you know, last year's champion of the Valley tournament, Daniel LaRusso, is back.
That's why it's just a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
Because like they can't get their own timeline correct. Mm-hmm. And then Daniel, like, he's like, "Oh, Mr. Miyagi, like, rather than you gave me all that money to go to college and I invested it, you know, and we're going to open a bonsai tree store," which the bonsai tree, it's very, and Dave pointed this out before we recorded, it's very representative of Daniel and his growth. And so it's an important symbol, but at the same time, in terms of financially, like, how much money are you going to make opening a bonsai like store? Like in the 80s, now everyone and their mother has plants. So it's like that would probably be a bit more lucrative comparatively. Mm-hmm. It's just silly. Like, you're not going to make any money on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dave, what about Terry Silver? Do we keep bringing up this Terry Silver guy?
Well, he's actually one of the best parts of the movie.
Yeah, no, he is. I don't know. You're like we were talking, typical 80s
bad guy,
rapscallion,
yeah,
sort of
exactly.
thing.
You know, it's chewing like, over the top bad guy.
Yeah. The thing about Terry Silver is like he's the best part of the movie in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Scene stealer, cool character, cool villain. I have him down. Cool character, cool villain, super likable.
Yeah.
You know, when he talks to, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But he has the weirdest evil plan, which is, I'm getting my revenge for John Kreese because he humiliated you. And and on top of that, he just wants to, his big evil plan is open up more karate. Just do it. Don't talk about it.
Yeah. Wouldn't that really show him? It's like, yeah, you won the battle, but we're going to win the war.
Yeah.
And Daniel can just be like, nah, whatever, kind of thing. All right, good for you, kind of thing.
Instead of hiring this teenage hitman and Mike Barnes to try and ruin, just a Johnny Lawrence, or Cobra Kai, guys on crack.
Yeah, Sean Kanan, who played Mike Barnes, who is actually like been very vocal about this movie. Mm-hmm. Like in it, like everyone, Ralph Macchio hates it, understandable. John Avildsen hates it.
Hated it.
Yeah, it's true. Thomas Ian Griffith said it's not great, but it gave me my first big role,
and
I can't thank the movie enough for at least giving me that experience. Sean Kanan, it sounds like he's kind of in the same boat to where it's like it's not great, but also like I was a fan of the series, it really did a lot for me, and he would be on soap operas later and stuff like that. So essentially, like, he was vocal about kind of liking the movie. But, he was saying in an interview that, it was like you said, it was Johnny Lawrence to, like, the 10th power.
Yeah, to the 10th power. Dave, you mentioned that he's likable. Now, if you do like seeing chewing over the top charismatic villains, he's likable in that way. But he's also, he takes a different turn that makes him likable and kind of, I personally was always disappointed whenever he went back to his true nature.
I think as an audience, most people are like, oh man, I really liked him being nice to Daniel. And like the whole movie, you're just kind of like, yeah, I really like him, like working with him and everything.
Yeah.
And then when he starts to train him, I guess that's when you guys said, the facade fades away.
Oh yeah. Well, and he starts to train it. Like his plan is to like lure Daniel in. And like give him this
false sense of security
because
this false sense of like power.
Yeah, because Daniel starts off by saying like I want to defend my title, and Mr. Miyagi's like that's not the point of karate. Like you use karate to defend yourself or
defend your honor.
But when you use it for a trophy, it's
also funny because like it's kind of like symbolic to the review of the movie. Like what. He didn't sign it because he didn't want to ruin the movie.
Yeah. And then he's pushed to his breaking point, and he eventually, no, you're right, Mr. Miyagi. And then when he meets Robin Lively, his friend who works at the pottery shop across from the bonsai store.
Yeah, she's great.
It's refreshing to not have to deal with a love interest. Like, they're just platonic friends, which is nice.
It also helps that, Ralph Macchio was like, don't do that. Don't write a love story because she's 16 and I'm 28. It's going to make my wife uncomfortable.
Yeah. And me uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the, he was thinking about his wife as
sure.
far as
of course.
Yeah.
But then he's pushed to his breaking point and Mr. Miyagi won't train him. And so he's trying to train by himself. Terry Silver, who up to that point was playing this nice guy who was like, I'm honorable. And he visits Mr. Miyagi and Daniel and he's like, I trained with John Kreese. We had the same, karate master. John Kreese just died. I just came here from Korea to bury him. And he's basically like, sorry for, he's this nice, peaceful guy. And then Danny essentially comes to him when he's like, I need to fight in this tournament. Mr. Miyagi's not going to train me. I need you to help me.
Mike Barnes keeps
antagonizing him. If you haven't seen the movie, he has this plan because he talks to him on the phone about what he wants to do. And I have it in my notes.
Yeah, please. I'm not trying to steal your thunder, Dave.
He said he's going to show him what pain is, and yeah, he's gonna thank me for it.
Yeah, when he's talking to Kreese,
everything he talked to Kreese about, he fulfilled it, and he wanted to break Miyagi. And when he was getting ready to train him, the first thing he asked was, "What does Mr. Miyagi think?" So that, and you can tell right there, he was just, that's where he's like, "Oh, I'm getting, you know,
yeah,
like
getting,
I'm turning into
yeah.
a bad guy,
yeah,
sort of thing." And but I'll get back to my notes on that, but yeah, I didn't mean to.
No.
I would like to hear what else you have to say.
Please.
About that. Yeah.
When he says one more thing, make his hands bleed.
Mm. Oh,
I always question: is he talking about Daniel LaRusso, or is he talking about Miyagi?
Right.
I feel like he's talking about Daniel, because the whole time Terry's saying, "I'm gonna do this to Daniel.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do this."
Yeah.
He doesn't talk about Miyagi, so I'm thinking Kreese is talking about Daniel.
Yeah. Yeah, I could also see Miyagi as well, because the second one opens up in the parking lot after the All Valley tournament, and Mr. Miyagi confronts Kreese, and Kreese is trying to punch him.
He's beating up his students.
Yes. Yeah. He's a psychopath, and he punched his hand through a window, which made his hand bleed. So I could see you also thinking he's talking about Mr. Miyagi, because he make his hand bleed, because
that's
he made my hand bleed, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's this, the idea of it is, it's a classic way to really like have a mind F, you know, like have this person
be cerebral,
have this person feign care and compassion so that you can infiltrate this relationship and tear it apart.
Yep.
But the thing is, these devious things and these really like effectively can really hurt people is all over a stupid karate tournament.
Yeah. And they tried with Bill Conti's music.
Yeah.
But it's just when there's no weight to any of it, there's no point.
Yeah. Cause you have, again, it goes back to the, you know, it feels like it's earned these kudos just cause it has tenure.
Yeah.
You know, the franchise, when you still have to like earn the things that you get, still work hard to like give the audit to make a good product.
Yeah.
And you can't just add these bullet points because the other two movies had them and forget the weight behind those things.
And Dave, I think you would agree, like, there's moments of intensity with Terry Silver. Like,
right.
We were just talking when he shifts. But again, like, that's completely undercut when you remember what the stakes are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. What else did I have? Oh, why the hell did he send Kreese to Tahiti?
Oh, Tahiti? I guess to rest up.
Because they only had Martin Cove for... They only had him for so long.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, another thing
same
is like
Robin Lively, she leaves before the final fight.
Yeah.
I brought up how it'd be much better if they just kind of like did a twist with him coming back without us knowing that he, you know, whether or not
like
died.
Without showing us him at the beginning.
Or like if they could have just made it seem like, oh well, Kreese is gone, there's a new bad guy now.
And yeah.
They could have done something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. We as the audience think he's dead.
Yeah, that's what they should have done. But
yeah, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's in Tahiti getting a back massage. And
yeah.
There's a cringy scene where Terry Silver's like...
In like a steam room, farting in a hot tub.
Dave, explain to us
Terry Silver farting in a hot tub.
Yeah.
I remember bathtub. Looking up Terry Silver because I haven't seen the movie, but... I saw the movie, but
like
a long
10
time
years ago.
Ago
when we were at your house. Yeah.
Yes. It definitely was 10 years ago. And I looked up on YouTube because you guys say he looks like me, which is another reason why he's a great character.
Yes, of course. I agree.
He's a handsome man.
So he would do these he basically did kata, except not really. He just he's kicking his legs
kata,
and stuff.
Yeah.
So he did these like real high kicks where his legs are straight up, and then he'd come back down and he'd fart.
Yeah.
And
the
then
whole video,
it was just a compilation of him just farting. And it was just so funny. And then we never could find that video after
it's
that
so
day.
Weird.
And now I'm keen on just making my own video.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll probably go viral now because Cobra Kai.
Yeah.
Yeah, to Thomas Ian Griffith.
What was great is he was a black belt.
Yeah.
And
he did taekwondo, did kempo, kickboxing, wrestling.
Yep.
His kicks were beautiful in that
movie.
Yeah. He was doing those spin kicks and mm-hmm. the introduction to him, his character.
Oh, yeah.
Sean Kanan had a green belt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
The thing is, all of this martial arts prowess put into a film that didn't deserve it.
Yep.
Like, mm-hmm. it's just one of those things where you, and then, like, the, I think you mentioned earlier, Dave, the addition of Terry Silver is just to try to force up in the ante to try and force weight, because this is, it's the third one, so it has to be the one with the most weight. Mm-hmm. So, John Kreese wasn't the head honcho of Cobra Kai. It's this businessman. It's this guy who deals with, like, toxic waste and dumping. It's this evil businessman mm-hmm. who it bankrolls the Cobra Kai.
So basically a lot of people don't understand, like, companies that they have to do something with toxic waste, and he's mm-hmm. like, well, I'll take it, and then they pay him a lot of money and he just dumps it in areas all over the earth.
He's like, you used to be able to dump it, and now everyone investigates everything.
But this movie, the kata, you'd mentioned the kata. Yeah.
There are each Karate Kid movie has some sort of crux, has some, like, in the training.
Yeah.
Like, we worked there was the unconventional methods, building to the crane in the first one.
Which
in the
teaches second, about balance.
Yeah, in the second one you had the little drum.
The drum, which teaches about, you know,
rhythm and movement.
Yeah, and, you know, your counter, you know, you dodge while also your counter punch comes from coming back from dodging. So the big thing was, you know, to win a fight, just avoid getting hit.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. that's then, how you win. You don't get hit.
Actually, Dave explained the purpose of the kata in this movie.
Because I was kind
of
lamenting at the end. I was like,
do they explain?
I was like, you know, the first movie, the crane is this. Yeah. The second movie, mm-hmm. the drum is this. It's like, what's mm-hmm. the, they just kept talking about the kata, but they didn't say why the kata.
Yeah.
Dave, why the kata?
The kata, I'm not sure, but I think the thing that gives it away for me is he says that you have to find the karate inside
you. Mr. Miyagi, yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Miyagi said that to Daniel when Daniel mm-hmm. was, like, on the ground in pain.
Yeah, in the final fight, yeah.
Which I also brought up, I don't know why Miyagi just does riddles and when he could just be straightforward. Yeah. It's a lot more helpful that way.
Like, I really don't have time to figure it out right now. Can, like, you just tell me what you're trying
to say? Like, I get it, you're a teacher and you don't want to tell me the answers, but we're in the middle of a fight.
Yeah.
And I'm defending a
and
title.
And I'm scared. Yeah. You just yelled at me.
So, yeah, I think the kata just represents, like, that inner karate that's already inside you.
Yeah.
And he's letting it out, like he's...
In the kata,
practicing and, mm-hmm. you can't see me doing it, but
and with a kata, I'd imagine you have to find balance in your breathing. You have to get yourself under control, and that sort of allows him to do that and find that inner karate.
So after he tells him that, he starts doing it, and you see Terry Silver's freaking out because he's he just kind of seems confident and it's freaking me out. So
Because like when Terry Silver starts quote unquote training him when he's a good guy, he's like, kata is good for, you know, endurance, but mm-hmm. you can't use it in a fight.
Not in the tournament. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'll give the movie a little bit of credit. So that being said, with the kata, which is very much about body control, it's about balance, it's about control. It's breathing,
getting focused.
Yeah.
Yep.
To give the movie credit, the first movie lays out a lot of these fundamental things for Daniel with through unconventional means, balance being part of that.
Yeah.
The second movie, it's a lot of about focus your breathing, focus here, focus there, focus everywhere. And then this movie, you can see how the kata can maybe culminate those two ideas.
Yeah, kata is bringing out the karate, bringing out the confidence in you. You saw that he said, he kept... it makes me cringe then, too, because he's in pain. He keeps telling him he's scared. That just doesn't seem like
I'm
something
scared.
Somebody
I'm
would
scared.
Admit.
Yeah.
I'm scared. I'm scared.
I think
that kind of confidence
especially,
brings it out of him.
Exactly.
I think that takes the piss out of Daniel's character growth, too, because at least in the first movie, he's learning fundamentals while also getting these bits of wisdom as to what karate really is, at least according to Mr. Miyagi, which is not far off. Second movie, there's that character growth because you see them training on things, but he's learning something new. Mm. And like I said earlier, you can tell he becomes capable and confident against Chosen.
Not once does he say,
puts
I'm
up
scared.
A,
scared.
He puts up a fight.
Yeah.
A couple times against Chosen.
I mean, that, you're talking about, I'm scared I'm going to lose the tournament to, I'm, you know, I'm fully confident and I'm getting ready to kill somebody.
Fight. But then you just came back from Japan where you fought for your life.
Kill or be killed. Yeah.
And then against Mike Barnes, just because he's like, he's a little meaner than Johnny Lawrence. You're scared. I'm scared of him. Again, it's that you think you've earned something just because of what you've established in the two movies, but you don't put forth the effort to really earn it, really make it have
weight.
They're
just running the underdog playbook.
Exactly. It's like, it's so forced.
Yeah.
Is the thing, and I don't blame Ralph Macchio for not liking the script.
Mm-hmm. And they also emphasize the bonsai trees representing the strong roots, and I think that's where all that comes from. The strong roots make you who you are, and blah blah blah.
Which is a great lesson, but it's buried in all this shit.
That's what keeps me from hating.
I think they emphasize that more than they did the tournament. I almost feel like we said, we shouldn't have had a tournament. We should have just had a fight, a street fight.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. Because then you're you're taking this thing that feels life or death, and now you're throwing it into something that has rules.
Yeah.
And granted, I know that Terry Silver's method for Mike Barnes was like, get a point and then lose a point.
Yeah.
Like, we want to make him suffer and stuff like that. But that's on such a small scale.
Yeah.
Do it in a street fight.
Yeah. The worst, if you continue to torture him, he's going to get disqualified.
Yeah.
And so and I know that it emphasized, so like, you know, Daniel, if you don't take care of this now, you're going to be running the rest of your life. But it's like, there are so many ways to solve that. There's no way to solve you being dead.
Yeah.
So it's like, again, when you really think about it, when you get past like the crescendoing music and like the over the top intensity of these characters, you're like, wait a second. Why did Daniel just move?
Yeah.
Or like Daniel's an adult after this. So it's like there's so many ways you can solve this problem.
Call the police.
Call the damn police. This person is harassing me. I've been put in jail. Like, I don't know. Like, they're trying, like you said, they're trying so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And, but Dave, you mentioned the lessons of the bonsai trees, and it's little stuff like that that's making this still watchable for me. It's keeping me from saying I hate this movie. And it's the bonsai trees, it's Terry Silver, he's a good villain, and Pat Morita is just constantly steady as Mr. Miyagi, even in the next Karate Kid.
The thing is, Terry Silver definitely overshadows John Kreese. He's much more, he's like, you guys have, you said he's a scene stealer. He's basically formidable. He's wanting to.
Yeah.
He really wants to just his. We've already said it. He just wants to humiliate Daniel, I guess.
Yeah. And he shows that he has those moments where you see he's an intimidating, dangerous man, even though him being scene stealing is a result of him kind of being cartoonishly over the top.
At one point, he like hides in a chimney. He's trying to get intel on Mr. Miyagi.
Funniest part.
And he sneaks into the house while Daniel's like distracted or whatever, into Mr. Miyagi's house. And this scene is just short of having dun 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 like him sneaking around the house, like.
Good thing he didn't fart while that fire was going on.
Exactly. Farting in away his position.
Then the fire explodes out of the chimney.
And he like sees that Mr. Miyagi pulls in, so it's that classic, like, oh, where do I hide? Because Daniel's on the other side of another door. And like, you have a scene progress where Daniel's like, yeah, you're right. Like, I don't need to compete in this tournament. And this is towards the beginning of the movie. And he throws the application in the fireplace, and it's starting to like burn, and they both leave, and you just hear... And Terry Silver's feet come down. It's just, it felt cartoony.
Yeah. Well, I will say, examples of when he is a likable character is when, I guess when they first meet, he's pretty nice to them. And he tries to use his charm with Miyagi. Oh, you've the 442nd or what?
You're a war hero. Yeah. Like, you know, that
was a cool part. The part where he helps him with Mike Barnes is pretty cool. And he's trying to teach him sweeps and stuff. I don't know. That kind of stuff. And then when they're working out and he's like, oh, fighting champion. And
He's such a good, nice guy.
Right. He's like, he does enough to let those defenses down. He's like, that's all right. That's all right. It's like, that, oh, sorry. It's like,
that's a testament to the performance because you know that he's a bad guy. Yeah. And you know that this is part of his plan, but he plays such a good guy.
That takes talent to do that because, I don't know if it's him as an actor, if anybody could have done that or what, but I kind of wish they would have left that part ambiguous too.
But we all knew
his plan. We all knew that he was going to do everything he said he was.
Like, are you saying you'd rather Terry Silver be introduced when he comes over to, like, Mr. Miyagi and Daniel are in the backyard doing a kata? And Terry Silver walks into the back and he's like, hi, my name's Terry Silver, kind of thing.
I think it would have been more interesting if it was a twist that he was a Cobra Kai leader and then that John Kreese was still alive. Yeah. I think that those two would have been good twists.
Yeah. Or we get introduced to Terry Silver when we do, but the character is still seemingly ambiguous. Like he's got no dog in the fight, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's a movie. It needs a little work. But I mean, you had mentioned, you know, this keeps me from, you know, hating it. And, you know, I don't think I could even bring myself, even if it didn't have those things that kind of save it, I don't know if I could bring myself to say I hate it. I don't.
Yeah.
I think what helps is the fact that we grew up kind of watching it here and there. And, you know, it's fine. Robin Lively's fine.
She has aged very well.
Yeah.
She's
always been a beautiful woman.
Yeah, she really is. I just feel bad for the Daniel character, but he was mature about it. But he was literally friend-zoned beyond belief. Especially, he's like, well, I have it in my notes. It says, oh, my boyfriend basically cheated on me, but we're going to try and make it work out. Yeah. That's friend-zone if I've ever seen
and
it.
And her character is in high school at that point. And so that's just immature kind of crap.
And then also, I know I'm saying she's fine. Like now, she's aged very well. She's 16 when they made this movie, so I'm going to dial that back a little bit because it's
tread lightly.
It's not my bag, baby.
Sure.
But she was very attractive.
Mm-hmm.
But the things that, even the things that save it from being a terrible movie, I still wouldn't say I don't hate it.
No,
like it's fine. Again, it's fine to put on the background for if you're doing a marathon of the sequels and of the
or running a marathon
or running outside. A marathon. It'll help you get through it. But it's just, I mean, Dave, you would watch. Would you suggest this movie to people?
If you like Cobra Kai, yes, I would say watch Karate Kid 3. If I could not tell someone to watch Karate Kid Part 3. I'm sorry.
What
I just
else
can't.
Do you have in your notes?
I said everything just, I needed to.
Gotcha.
The one thing.
Which I appreciate you taking.
Yeah, for
I mean,
sure.
Again, we need to reiterate, guests, it's not required that you even come slightly prepared.
It's not required to even
we
come.
We just like having, we just like having you here.
I have in here, I'm glad they have new characters instead of bringing characters from the first movie back, which they did, but and they brought Mike Barnes in, who's a brute. What is he, like a national champion? I don't know.
He's a bad boy.
They didn't bring Johnny Lawrence back.
Yeah.
I also had in my notes that him and Johnny Lawrence would have probably clashed if they were in Cobra
Kai
together.
I would be interested to see what their dynamic is. Like dial it back, dude.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. I said that this movie doesn't need Mike Barnes, and it doesn't, but Mike Barnes is still a very... He's still serviceable.
Soap opera actor.
Yeah, exactly.
Very much a soap opera actor.
He's mostly it's storytelling in this movie that hurts it.
Yeah.
Most of the characters are range from fine to okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thing. It's from like Terry Silver and Mr. Miyagi are the runaway favorites for me.
It's nobody's insufferable, even though Danny is petulant and whiny and selfish. And that can grate on your nerves, especially since what the first two movies offered as far as character development goes.
get frustrated when he's on the bonsai tree and he gets all every time he gets frustrated, yeah. he's like, oh, I got it, okay?
Yeah.
I can't stand
that. Let me do it.
Yeah. That
just forget it.
Then this movie kind of just tells you, like, he doesn't really grow. He's just going to be like this. Even in Cobra Kai, he's like that too. He gets frustrated and whiny.
Yeah, so. And that's most of the movie. Then they try and bring it back around to where he's like, okay, like I've lost myself in this training with Terry Silver. It still feels like, eh.
Yeah.
Like I see what you're trying to do, mm-hmm. but eh. I ain't buying it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't hit this Karate Kid trope yet. Let's shoehorn it in.
Yeah, let's do it. Like they shoehorned a lot of things in this movie.
Yeah, exactly. Again, people have, if you're listening, you probably have seen it. You have your opinion, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I don't hate it.
Sure.
I don't love it.
Right.
It's
me neither.
It's fine. It's fine.
It yeah. brings down the average of what would otherwise be a series that gets a high grade.
Yeah. Up to this point, a very good set of movies. Yeah. And then this kind of makes mm-hmm. The Karate Kid a fine trilogy. But you know, let us know your opinions. Mm-hmm. We always say, hit us up on social media.
Any parting thoughts, Dave?
No, it's definitely not like you got your trilogies. It's definitely not the Return of the King, the Return of the Jedi. Yeah. It's not at all. It's Return of the Tournament is what that is.
Yeah, exactly. You immediately, like I said, you take characters and situations, take like 5 steps back.
Yeah.
They're just spinning their wheels. They lose all their momentum.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not all of it. Miyagi, like you said, he's still solid.
Yeah, for sure.
Other than all that, that's Karate Kid Part 3 from us.
Yeah. Quick. I was about to say a quick watch. It's almost 2 hours long. Just letting you know the Karate Kid movies are pretty long. Even the next Karate Kid's almost 2 hours long.
Yeah. They try to do what they can, just like we always try to do what we can. Yeah. Dave, like always, thank you for joining
thank
us.
Thank you for having me. Yes. On a great episode.
Yes. I'll say.
It was, yep. As solid as my shits.
Yeah, exactly.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. We got 5 time on the horizon.
Yep, oh, 5 time on the horizon. You know what else is on the horizon? A new month.
Oh, this is very true.
It's not going to be themed this time around.
But we do have
some episodes.
Schedule, yeah.
We do have some episodes lined up in May. I think we should announce it now. In May, it's going to be called Mighty Morphin May.
Yes.
Because it's the 30th anniversary of quite possibly the most important bit of nostalgia for us, because I would say it started everything.
Yeah.
Like with, I know over the years, if you've been listening a while, we kind of like pinpoint various things.
Batman
to say, oh, this
Forever.
Started out, this, it
this,
all kind of intersected at the same point. But Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, I think I would give the trophy to what is the
first obsession.
It was the first obsession.
Yeah,
it's the start of all of this.
Yeah.
To what would lead to this.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is we're going to spend that month celebrating the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers on the 30th anniversary of it coming to the States as the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Yep.
Week one, we're going to be doing a retrospective of season one.
Mm-hmm.
Week
Steven
two.
Steven and I.
Yeah. Week two, retrospective of season two.
Steven and I.
Week three, retrospective of season three.
Yeah.
And hopefully if everything works out, we're going to be doing the Radcast Ranger Ramble with a couple of returning guests, which we are excited about that, going to get their experiences while also using our experiences of the previous 3 weeks of what we've learned, our memories. It's gonna be a good time.
I'm excited.
And then it's the summer when Dave will come back for his 5th time.
Awesome.
Hell yeah.
We're excited for what we're planning
for
that.
Sure.
So am I.
Yes,
so are absolutely. All the listeners.
Yes.
I'll speak for the listeners.
Yes. No, he speaks for all of us.
Yes. As Dave's has a message for all of you that he speaks for all of you.
Yeah.
I have a message for all of you saying thank you once again for joining us. Yep. And until the next time,
be good to yourselves, be good to each other, because why would you want to be rude? You could be rad. We'll see you next time.
This concludes our broadcast day.